This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, rain is a gun. Fast to freedom,
stars tonight.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for March 30th, 2021. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Network feed, or you can find us on our own dedicated podcast feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, there's no obligation whatsoever. Just click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing page. You click the red box that says sponsor of this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or recurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Aaron Mike Spears, joining alongside, as always, Case Lowe. In case we finally have a show with some substance to bite into, a singular show. None of this Champion Gate doubleheaders thing. We're talking about Memorial Gate 2021 and Wakayama happened on the 27th. In case it's good to finally kind of feel like that we are easing back into the Dragon Gate schedule and ease into it with a really fun big show.
Yeah, I was thinking about this earlier this afternoon, that the Western buzzometer, at least, and I think a lot of this episode, we can kind of compare and contrast the Western vibe to the intel that we have from the native fans, but the Western buzzometer went from being as high as it had been in 5 years as we hit the backstretch of 2020 and into Final Gate with the five-star match that was tremendous, and Dragon Gate ended the year on a really high note where it felt like Western fans were finally back to paying attention and taking notice of this promotion in a way that the promotion deserved, because, you know, they've been having such a tremendous output over the past 18 months or so. And then January was just kind of there, and February was just kind of there. And I think people were shaken up a little bit, were forced to bring their eyes back to the promotion with the Kaito Ishida versus Shun Skywalker match at the beginning of March, and now with Sakamoto versus Skywalker at the end of the month. It seems like maybe some of that buzz can return to this promotion, especially because NOAH is a retirement home, New Japan is whatever they are, and DDT...
A bad belt factory.
Look, New Japan's a lot of bad right now. Sorry, I was right, but it happens. You know, people don't want to listen to me. I get it. I'm right about most things, but people don't want to listen to me. And, you know, DDT, you know, I'm so disgusted with myself, Mike. I was becoming a DDT guy. I watched their last Cork and Hall show live on their little streaming gimmick. I've never watched a DDT show live in my life. And I get what I thought was an excellent Jun Akiyama versus Kazusada Higuchi match. I think I'm higher on it than most people. And what do I get for that? What do I get for my dedication, for my newfound, renewed interest, my refound interest in the promotion? I get Dino coming out and challenging Akiyama. It's basically a slap in the face. I'm disgusted with myself for thinking that DDT was
coming.
Worth my time. I can't believe it. I'm so sick.
Yeah, I'm just going to say this. It's DDT. You should always have back in your brain. Oh, wait. Don Kishido, Denshoku Dino might be coming out for a title challenge.
And the disgusting thing is, Akiyama is still probably going to have a great match with him, because it's going to main event Cork and Hall, and it's Jun Akiyama, but oh my god, his music hit, and he came out, and I was sick to my stomach, Mike. The good news is, Dragon Gate would never do such a thing. There have been times where I've been frustrated at the promotion, times where I said, maybe I should take a break, but I don't. I power through, and then we get shows like Memorial Gate in 2021, which we have not talked about. I could hear from the sound of your voice, the energy that you have, that maybe you liked this show a little bit more than me. And I'm very curious, as we kind of go through this card, how you feel about it, because it was a show that was good, but all day I was kind of struggling to come up with how to articulate the show. Even writing the written review over at voiceswrestling.com, that review took me a really long time to write, because a lot of it was like, well, they built to this, and then it delivered, and it was good, and okay, we're done here. There was just... I don't feel like I could bite into a lot of things on this show, so it's interesting that you started off the show saying there was a lot for you to sink your teeth into.
Well, I think the way that I looked at the show, and maybe it was that because between doing the group preview on Voices of Wrestling and then doing a column about the Dreamgate match, it had my wheel spinning about this, especially towards Kazuma Sakamoto, and that was my focus on the show, was the main event there. But everything else on the show, I mean, it's a 2.5 hour B show, like B in the tier system of Dragon Gate, where you have Kobe World as your absolute S tier top show. Then you have Dead or Alive, Dangerous Gate, Gate of Destiny, and Final Gate as your A shows. And then you have your Champion Gates, you have your Memorial Gates, you have your Gate of Origins. So for a B show for 2.5 hours, I thought it was an incredibly fun watch. And I thought that everything was either up to my expectations, with the exception of one match, or exceeded it. But that all being said, I mean, we have a main event here that I think it's probably best from us like working our way from the top to the bottom. But just like the overall details about it, it was on the 27th. It will be up on the network for the Japanese VOD until the 3rd. There's already commentary up on the English side as Jay and Ho-Ho Loon have been happily reunited. Attendance case, because now we could kind of compare this to stuff from last year, because it's always kind of tough talking about attendance in the first year of COVID. Now we can directly compare it to last year. 485, which is massively up from last year at 370. And I, looking at the shows that opened up, I did not think they had close to 500 people in this venue. It's a rather big venue, but I guess like behind the hard cam, it's a single cam show. Like it's going to be, that's just what it is. But I was pretty impressed by how people showed up for it, and especially considering how quiet this crowd was at times.
Yeah, that's a good house. I mean, I have been firmly on the side of not really not being interested in discussing pandemic attendance. I think there's too many factors going on in it, but unfortunately, now that we're a year into this, we can kind of look at some year-over-year comparisons. Memorial Gate last year happening in August of 2020, this year happening in March. It's a good sign for me. Now, the thing is, I can't take a victory lap here and say, well, Skywalker's working as a champion, Sakamoto was a credible challenger, this and that, because Memorial Gate was one of the first shows that Dragon Gate ran with fans back after COVID-19 hit last year. There was still probably some uneasiness about the protocols that were set in place, about the safety of the venue. And now, at least from my understanding, and maybe Mike knows better than I do, but it seems like Japan is starting to recover a little bit more. Cases are down. People are starting to have some more freedom within the venues. There was an outdoor 0-1 show where fans were allowed to cheer. It's hard to say, yes, this is a win for Dragon Gate because it's still pandemic attendance, but we'll chalk it up as a win with an asterisk.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the way I would look at it, is I'm just directly comparing it to last year's, and it's an improvement. And if you look at the card, comparing 2020 to 2021, arguably last year's card was a lot more loaded because you had Nuriki Doi up top against Ada, who is a known quantity, whereas this time you have Shun Skywalker, who his attendance in doing title matches, not bad. He is I wouldn't call him a big draw in the box office as much as we can tell, but I'd say that, you know, as expected, he's doing pretty well. And then Kazuma Sakamoto, who of course, first freelancer to get a title shot since Magdu Kishiwada back in 2009, had the opportunity to be the first freelancer, or rather outsider, to be Dreamgate champion since Jushin Thunder Liger. So the fact they got close to 500 with that, and then a tag match with Kanda and Arai versus Mochizuki and Yoshida, and that's what we're putting out there. I have to look at it, at least business wise, as a just absolute success.
Well, the thing is, and this is kind of my big talking point coming out of this show, is we have to start looking at Skywalker's title reign as a win right now. yes, there are still charisma issues and promo issues that we've addressed on the show. And, you know, Mike, I will credit him until the end of time that as soon as he saw Masquerade laid out, he said, this is going to be their issue. And everything we've heard from the native fans is that the issue of promos and charisma connecting with that audience has been an issue. And Mike sniffed that out immediately, and he was right. But not only do we have this attendance that's pointing in the direction saying, hey, you know, people really like Skywalker. Is he on that Yamato, Doi, Yoshino tier? No, but is he a serviceable Dreamgate champion? Yes, and I think serviceable would be understating it a little bit, because from an in-ring perspective, he has been tremendous now. He's been the exact sort of champion that I would want if you told me that Shun Skywalker was going to be an Open the Dreamgate champion. Again, this reign got off to such a weird start. One, with just the return, and then the 14 days later beating Eita. It was cool, but it was rushed, and it was just hard for everything to sink in. And then the Ben K match, which again, if you take away the last 90 seconds of that match when Ben K was knocked out cold and you had the awkward finish, that was a great match. I mean, that was a spreadsheet-worthy match up until the botched 3-count, which I don't fault anybody for. It's just one of those things that happen. Skywalker then, you know, 4.75 against Ishida. That was my rating, and 4.5 here against Sakamoto. I can't ask for much more from a Dreamgate champion. He's someone that I think is battling for credibility, but when the moment matters, when he's in that big spot, he looks credible. He feels like a champion. And it's an uphill battle, but it is a battle he is winning. And 3.5-4 months into this Dreamgate run, I'm incredibly impressed with the work that Shun Skywalker's doing.
Yeah, so the result was Shun Skywalker making his third successful defense. He gets his third Dream Key with the SSW and in 19 minutes, 18 seconds. And I know we were talking about it at the time, Case. I still rated that Benkei title challenge. And if you, and I think I said when we talked about the title challenge, I was like, it's a shame about the how this match ended, because this would have been a 4.5-star or higher match. And he's probably, with the exception of Kenny Omega, one of the best in-ring champions in the world right now. I mean, he has not missed since winning the title. It's just the charisma thing, but that's an overall, like, generational issue, I'd say, that the company has, and just Shun Skywalker kind of brings it to the forefront. When your champion is not the person who is selling out all of the rally towels, and it's Kota Minenora as the person in your unit who's selling the most, you know, it's just what it is. But, you know, between the bells, there's, I again, with the exception of Kenny Omega, I don't think anyone has really performed as well as a Dreamgate champion or as a champion of a company in general. And I mean, I went 4.5 stars on this match as well, Kaz. I know you did. And it's something where Kazma tapped into something that we saw in pre-excursion Shun Skywalker. And I think that's what differentiated this match versus the defense against Kaito Ishida and the generational battle versus Benkei.
You know, the other thing that, and maybe it'll sound like an excuse for Masquerade, maybe it is, I don't know, but Skywalker is at an incredible disadvantage being champion in the era that he is with these clap crowds, because I am just led to believe from what I've seen from their in-ring work that if you put those Masquerade 6-mans and 8-mans in front of a normal crowd, those buildings are going to be rocking. They're going to be responding to the in-ring that is happening, and that would elevate Skywalker in our eyes. But we're watching a guy that can't really speak, so he doesn't connect with the fans there, and then the fans aren't allowed to emote when he's in the ring, and it creates this just hollow feel that I think he specifically has been affected by more than other guys on the roster. There are guys in Dragon Gate right now that feel hot and that feel over. And Skywalker is one of those guys where I'm kind of biting my fingernails on his way to the ring, like, oh, I hope this is good. I hope he delivers. And then the bell rings and he's tremendous. But again, it's an uphill battle that I think is specifically waging war against him in this exact time period. But he and Kazuma Sakamoto went out there and they killed it. I mean, luckily, I think this will end any conversation as to whether or not Sakamoto can hang in Dragon Gate, whether or not he can work this style. I have in my written review over at voiceofwrestling.com his second match that he worked in the promotion. I went on this whole thing about how, you know, Sakamoto's never going to challenge for the Dreamgate belt. He doesn't need to. That's not his role. But he's a guy that can work on this roster. I've seen enough in two matches to say that he can work within this roster. I never would have imagined that he would be challenging for the Dreamgate belt, not on a Corcoran Hall show, not even at Champion Gate, but on a Memorial Gate show. That's a pretty big deal. And not only did he hold his own, but Mike, he was terrific in this match.
Yeah, and it's something that I just, like, look at Sakamoto, and this match started, like, how you'd expect, like, kind of like how the Ishida match was, but then Sakamoto was able to really use his size in a way that not just make himself look impressive, but, like, the second rope monkey flip that Shin Skywalker did, absolutely nuts, and part of that is Kazuma Sakamoto. Like, part of that is, like, that looks impressive that way. And it's something where, like, he definitely portrayed more of a cerebral challenger, like the idea that every moonsault that Shin Skywalker hit, other than his knee salt, standing knee salt, he rolls out of the way or rolls immediately to try to rolls onto his stomach or rolls to the outside. And it's just like a different kind of cerebral wrestler that, you know, with Sakamoto, we've seen him kind of as the freight train with the knee of death and everything. But it was a nice kind of edge there. And, you know, for 20 minutes there, he showed that, like, he could stack up with the variable best in the company at this time. And, you know, it's something that he has shown such a mind that I think the match that I'm really pulling for King of Gate this year is Masaki Mochizuki versus Kazuma Sakamoto. Because I think that match between two people who seem to be people who have a very cerebral look into wrestling. And I know I've said cerebral a couple times there, Kiz, but
that's okay. You're the cerebral assassin, Mike. You can do whatever you want.
I'm not Triple Tuesday. What can I say? Even though we record on a Tuesday, I am not Triple Tuesday. But, like, these are two guys who absolutely, like, get wrestling and get, like, the psychology behind it. And I think Masaki Mochizuki and Kazuma Sakamoto would have, like, a sleeper number 10 match on my best of the 2021 list. But I think Sakamoto delivered, and I think they tapped into, as I said before, the kind of stuff we were seeing from Shun pre-excursion, where he was kind of just holding on, and then he had the moment with, like, where he started going and he hit his flying big boot, and he's like, you know what, this is it, I'm the Dreamgate champion, he is not, and I'm just going to steamroll through him, and then hit one of the most spinning SSWs that he's pulled off there for the win, and, you know, came away with this incredibly satisfied.
Yeah, Sakamoto and Mochizuki, they worked that empty arena King of Gate show last year, but it wasn't truly Sakamoto versus Mochizuki. It was, I don't want to say they were going through the motions, but it wasn't a strong match. I know there were some people that liked it. I liked a lot of stuff from those empty arena shows. That was not one that I loved. But coming out of this match, you mentioned Sakamoto's mind, and for whatever reason, that struck a chord with me, just because, you know, he really is a smart wrestler, and he gets a lot out of doing a little. And I hope that he sticks around, and quite honestly, at some point down the line, I'd like to see what he can do as a babyface, and it's not to discredit the heel unit right now, but there's a lot of guys within RED that, for as good of work as they're doing now, I think they would be incredibly interesting babyfaces in the either immediate or you know, just long away future, because obviously Eita will turn at some point, and I'm very intrigued by babyface Eita. We've seen Ishida and how over he can be as a face, and I think the next time he turns, we'll see that return. SBK at some...
Okay, so just jump in there. The next time Kaito Ishida turns, that is his capital T, capital R run.
Thank you, sir. I completely agree. I mean, I think if Champion Gate showed, like, hey, this guy's on the cusp of really being something, and you know, SP Kento is probably going to be the face of this company one day. He's going to be a dynamite babyface. Hip Hop Kakuta, we've seen, has that sort of silent killer energy that I really like. When he turns, he'll be great. It's really, you know, Hyo, I think, can be a heel for a very long time and stay there. Hulk, at this stage in his career, I think is far more effective as a heel than he is a babyface. Diamante, you know, there's...
Who knows?
Yeah, there's not a ton of character work there for me to really sink my teeth into. I think his in-ring work would not be affected by one role or another. But I look at a guy like Sakamoto, it's like, man, I kind of just want to see what he could do if he's teaming with, you know, KZ and Horiguchi or something. Not saying he's in Natural Vibes, but just looking at those guys on the roster, I think he would do very well in that role, and it just shows the evolution of him in this promotion of, even, you know, again, I was a supporter for match one. I saw that he could hang, but going, oh, he's, you know, he's an undercard heel, that's fine. Then going, well, you know, he's pushed, but he's good, so I'm okay with it. And now thinking, like, man, I kind of want this guy to be a bigger part of the booking plans. Like, he's that good.
Yeah, and it's something where he's over. Like, that's the thing that really is because I know you're someone that really likes looking at the native response, but, like, all the promo stuff, he's over. And I'd be interested in seeing that face run as you support it, just because I think that he has the charisma to make it work.
It was a super impressive match. Like I said, I was at 4.5, Mike was at 4.5. It's definitely a must-watch. If you haven't seen anything from the promotion this year, I think the January 12th Open the Twin Gate match, the Shun Skywalker versus Kaito Ishida match from Osaka, and then this match, those are your big three that you need to watch. Because it was just everything I wanted to be. Sakamoto hit Skywalker hard. Skywalker bounced all across the ring. He did some big flips. He did some dives. Then he fought back. My favorite spot of the match, besides the monkey flip, which I just lost my mind over, but these guys went like Bryan Danielson, Nigel McGuinness towards the finish and started trading headbutts with one another. And I have never seen a Dreamgate match where there are headbutts back and forth like that.
Yeah, I mean, as much as Shingo Takagi will hit a headbutt, he would not just, it would be one headbutt and that's it, you know?
Yeah, like it was just nice to see, because that's the underrated part of Shun, is that when he has to throw hands or heads, he can really do that, and I thought he looked credible, I thought he looked tough. Like I said, at this point, I have talked myself in, I am in on this Shun Skywalker run as champion. My guess is he'll probably lose the belt in June, and if he doesn't lose the belt in June, then he'll go into Kobe World as champion, and he'll lose the belt to, I think Mike and I's pick at this point is Yamato, but still, I am into this title run now. I was fired up, for lack of a better term, I was fired up coming out of this match.
Should we talk about the post-match now, or talk about it after match three?
Mike, let's talk about the post-match now.
So, right as, basically, Shun was taking the photo with the dignitary who I don't know exactly what I guess it's like the pointed outside official for these things. They always do this in Dragon Gate, and I find it very fascinating. Sometimes it's like mayor, sometimes it's governors, but I don't know who it was this time. Basically, as soon as the person handed over the belt, the key was on the belt and the certificate, Hip Hop Kakuta hit the ring, jumped legitimately 5 feet into the air and just clocked Shun Skywalker with his hip, and has announced that he is not that he's asking for a challenger, he's named himself the next challenger. We have that match signed, and it is at a very interesting point, Case, because it will be the semi-main event of Dead or Alive, will be Shun Skywalker making his fourth defense of the Open the Dreamgate championship against Hip Hop Kakuta before Hip Hop Kakuta officially has his 1 year anniversary.
There's a lot to unpack here. I can't go any further without mentioning that words cannot do justice to the hip attack that Hip Hop Kakuta hit on Shun Skywalker. This man, his ass acted like a sniper rifle, and he nailed Shun Skywalker in the face. Like Mike said, legitimately jumped like 5 feet in the air. It was incredible. And now we are at a point, go ahead, Mike, go ahead.
Oh, it was something where, like, if the Vine or TikTok teens had an opportunity to do this, you would put the Grand Theft Auto Fade to Black and waste it on it. It was that good of a hip attack.
We gotta get TikTok teens in on Hip Hop Kakuta. I could see that getting over. I don't do the TikTok. My boss, I work in media, and my boss just made me download TikTok, and I was... I don't understand it. I follow one person on there. There's a very pretty girl that paints, and I was like, "Well, shit, I'm into that content. I mean, I'll watch that all day." But I don't understand the culture of it. I had a real cultural crisis today. I'm just bummed out about the way we're consuming art and the art that's being created. And I don't like the fact that I'm looking at my phone 500 times a day, but it's literally all that I do, and it sucks, and I don't like it, but I mean, it's a complete and utter addiction, and now I have pretty girls painting on TikTok, which is not the worst thing. I will be addicted to that, but it's still, I just wish the teens would get in on Hip Hop Kakuta, because I think that act could be over with the ominous casual fan.
I mean, Linky is Hell Dude, who is literally pear-shaped, and they are just going with it.
Yeah, I mean, he's thick with two C's. He's incredible. 11 months into his pro wrestling career, the point that I will continue to reemphasize, he has not wrestled a match in front of a normal crowd. He debuted in an empty arena. He toured with the clap crowds. He is now being pushed in front of the clap crowds. 11 months into his career, he is challenging for the Open the Dreamgate title. Is he headlining? No, but who gives a shit? He's second from the top on one of the five biggest shows of the year. And oh, by the way, his contemporary, another 21-year-old, is in the main event. Mike, this is absurd.
Yeah, you know how for the last 18 months, case, we've been like, oh yeah, guys, this is the time to get in because they're building up and setting up for the next generation. Proof right here, where you have two guys, one guy who's 21, one guy who has not yet turned 25, and doing a title match, and Shun Skywalker, less than 5 years into his career, Hip Hop Kakuta, we're not even at 1 year. And then you look at the main event, the uncrowned best rookie in the world for 2021 in his hometown main eventing, and is probably going to be the person getting the big push coming out of that match. So it's remarkable stuff, and it's something really to kind of keep an eye on, as now we are pretty much full speed ahead to Dead or Alive, and you know they already have the two main matches there, and at this point with how they draw and how they put stuff together, there will probably be there'll be a Twin Gate and a Triangle Gate match, probably. Who knows at this point? Because I don't think they'll be having five big matches on this show. But they are loading things up here. And I'm right now on the Dragon Gate English Facebook page. And maybe it is Facebook's interesting way of cropping out. There's a lot of people who are front and center on this Dead or Alive 2021 poster who do not yet have a match, including Naruki Doi, KZ, Eita, and, of course, Masato Yoshino.
Yeah, I think a lot of this card is going to come down to whether or not Yoshino wrestles. And obviously, I hope he does. I would hate for him to miss his final Dead or Alive show. But when you have two matches like this, and I think the main event, that cage match that is SB Kento and Dragon Kid against Kai and Yamato, with the losing team then going into a singles match, and the loser of that singles match losing his hair or his mask, that main event feels really hot to me. Every indication I have from this go-home angle at Memorial Gate is that Kakuta versus Skywalker is off to the right start, which means you're put in a position where you can do kind of whatever you want on that undercard. My guess is we're going to get either a 9-man or a 12-man Triangle Gate match with Natural Vibes in there against a high-end team, a Masquerade team, an RED team, and then if another unit forms great, or some, you know, unaffiliated trio at that. It's very exciting. And, you know, again, we prepped you. We said this is the next generation, thinking, at least for me, thinking, well, you know, by, you know, 2023, 2024, these guys will be established. It's here. It's now. And it irks me to some extent when I read valid critical commentary of other wrestling promotions, and it's not an us versus them thing. I have no loyalty to Dragon Gate. I just happen to, you know, obviously love the promotion. It just seems like Dragon Gate does so many things that fans claim to want from wrestling, and they're off of this little island, and it drives me nuts. I just want to bring people into this party because they do so many things not only so well, but just better. Just, it's just such an excellent, prestigious brand. And I love the fact that a 24-year-old is wrestling a 21-year-old for the world title, and we're not scratching our heads at it. It feels right. It feels like it's the right time for this match. That's incredible.
And it's something that I'm with you. Until you pay me, I will be critical. As soon as you pay me, I will toe whatever line you want to. Please pay me.
Just to be clear, we can be bought very easily by Gaora, by Dragon Gate. If Cyber Agent wants to get in touch with me, brother, I'll be pumped for that Akiyama versus Dino match. You just make sure the money deposits.
I mean, do you know how many dog toys Pudge has gone through in the last week. Like, straight up, like, it, and it's one of those things that, like, that they kind of, like, stack up at a certain point. So, yes, like, if it, I am more than willing to, the DMs are open, but it's just remarkable and just kind of, like, variant that, because, like, you had this happen and it felt like a big time angle at the end of this and provided some direction where I feel like, I can't speak for your case, but I was like, all right, there's no way Kazuma was going to retain, whereas with Kaito Ishida, I couldn't dismiss that out of hand. But looking forward and looking towards Dead or Alive, I thought that was a giant question mark. Well, hell, we'll just, like, throw in one of our rookies in the semi-main event in a title match in a very – because our main event is so protected because you have Dragon Kid in his hometown, SB Kento in his hometown, versus the face that runs the place, Yamato, and everyone's favorite scumbag, Kai. Like, it's just – it's a masterstroke there. And then going back on your point – of, like, people trying to get invested in here. I thought that I know that you watched this live or mostly live. I just it was something where, like, I was not gonna, I thought about staying up late for it, Kaze, but it just was not happening that night. But then I caught the English commentary. Jay and Ho-Ho Loon are back together, and boy, did the chemistry never stop there. And it was just like a great 2.5 hours. Maybe that's another reason why I was so high on it, was because Jay was cracking jokes about hip-hop Kakuta's big ass, and Ho-Ho Loon, the very naive person he is, was not getting him.
Yeah, I did not watch the show live. I had a woman come over to my apartment on Friday night. Not a super pleasant experience. It was kind of one of those deals where it was like, oh, we'll hang out, and then we'll watch a movie. And when the hanging out portion was done, I was like, I'm ready for her to leave my apartment now. And we still had to sit there and watch a movie. So my sleep schedule was off. I'm not mentioning that to brag. I'm mentioning that because I was doing a poor journalistic job. I did not watch the show live. I watched it the next morning. But it sounds like the English commentary delivered. Is that fair to say?
I mean, the one of the lines was, it was like, how is he allowed to have all of that? And referring to hip-hop Kakuta's ample butt, and Ho-Ho Loon saying, do you think he has to get extra new tights made?
I love them. I love that pairing so much.
It's very, very charming, and they were great across all the show. If you're wondering when Ho-Ho Loon shows up, it's partway through match two, as he should.
That was the one question I had for Mike on the English commentary, is when does Ho-Ho get into the booth? It's like, oh, right, you know, right after he was done.
Exactly. Perfect. Unless you have anything else, let's talk about the other title match on the show.
Let's do it.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
All right, this was for the Open the Twin Gate titles. This was the champion team of Masaaki Mochizuki and Takashi Oshida versus the challenger team of Yasushi Kanda and Kenichiro Arai. The champion team would make their first successful defense after a combination Senkaku Gary to the face into a cyber bomb where Yoshida pinned Kanda.
So I think I figured out this Twin Gate run that Mochizuki and Yoshida are going to have very middling, occasionally bad, and often uneventful road to trios matches teaming with Fuji or Ultimo or whoever else. And then when the bell rings in these title matches, Takashi Yoshida is going to work his ass off in ways that, because this guy was so lazy for so long, it is hard for me to compute in my brain just how good he is as a babyface. It's amazing that he was a heel for 13 straight years when this guy is one of the most natural and lovable faces that I can remember, at least in recent memory. I mean, this guy just works in front of this audience and they're so receptive to him. And it's great. This match completely over-delivered. Was it a great match? No. Was it a very good match? Absolutely it was.
Yeah, like, it was something that Yoshida, his ring work, is not going to be my cup of tea. It's something that I've been through enough of it that, like, you can fool me a lot of times, but eventually I'm not going to trust you. But character-wise and teamwork with Misaki Mochizuki, this is tremendous stuff. And this match, I would say, frankly, over-delivered. Like, I walked in to, like, this match thinking, like, hey, if they get 3.25 stars, this is going to be a pretty solid defense. But then Erika and Kanda both held up there in the bargain, too. I mean, we got sneaky technique master Kenichiro Arai to start this match, and it kept this at a very quick pace, which if you consider the combined age, I think you're talking about close to 200 of everyone in this match. And it's something where, yet again, Takashi Yoshida has upheld his end of the bargain. And, you know, it was something where, like, you look at the challenger tag team of Kanda and Arai, and you're just naturally like, okay, I know what's going to happen here. But they went out there, and for 13 minutes, they had a hell of a semi-main event that I went 3.75 on.
There's a part of me that hopes that this is the last time that Arakan and Kanda are ever in title matches, because they went out with a bang if this is their last one. You know, years from now, when we're scrolling through Cage Match, and, you know, we're going, oh, remember this, remember this. If this is the last time that Arakan is in a title match, at least a Dragon Gate title match, because that man will be winning Guts World heavyweight titles until the end of time. But if this is his last Dragon Gate title match, we'll be able to look back on this and go, man, wasn't that fun? Like, Arakan was the Triangle Gate champion, and then he hurt his shoulder, and then COVID happened, unrelated as far as I'm concerned, and then he comes back a year later and has this really fun Twin Gate match. Man, it's nice that he ended his career, his, you know, big time player career on such a high note. And the same can be said for Kanda, who for years was not only not good, but at times actively bad. And I thought he held up his end of the bargain here as well. This match put a smile on my face.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that really since Toriumon Generation formed and he joined up with them, you know, for the last, I guess it's close to almost a year and a half, you know, he's not full-time. He only shows up on, like, the bigger television shows and then the big events, but he's put his best foot forward. He's never been a detriment, and I will always have a place in my heart for Kenichiro Arai in Twin Gate matches case. I hope he has another 10 Twin Gate matches. I hope he go finds Taku Iwasa from from Iwasa's dad's insurance office and says, come on, dude, we got it. We got some belts to win. Like, that's what I'm hoping for here, but you know, like, this is something that, like, this is, like, when we talk about Memorial Gate in history, and I know I talked a little bit about that last week, this was a match that kind of would have been a pre-Dragon Gate Network Memorial Gate main event, and it over-delivered.
Do we have any feel for who could be next in line for Mochizuki and Yoshida? Because unless I missed
no
something,
clue.
Yeah, I really...
No clue.
It's amazing, and I'm so glad the show ended with a Dreamgate angle, because it gave us something going forward other than the cage match to look forward to. But, God, with Mochizuki and Yoshida, it could be anyone. It might be one of those deals where they're not defending the belts in April or at Dead or Alive, and then you have King of Gates, so they might not be defending the belts until June. Would that surprise you if we just don't see the Twin Gates in action for another 2.5 months?
I think that with the way they've built up the Sapporo triple, now quadruple shot, one of the shows is not going to be on the network, but they have another show they're doing in Sapporo as well, would be kind of, it matters how big they're going with King of Gate this year. If it's a knockout tournament again, then I think they'll probably put a Twin Gate match there. But if it's a fair turn to round robin play, I don't know. Like, it's usually a safe bet. I mean, Fukuoka will probably get the finals as usual. So I'm right now doing the schedule of Dragon Gate in my head right now, Case, which is very scary and something that says a lot about me as a person. But, I think we'll probably see one beforehand, but we don't have the full schedule up yet for June, and that's what gives me a little bit of pause. But looking at how things are, would not be surprised at the Sapporo double shot. Oh, the Fukuoka probably won't be the finals this year, Case, because Fukuoka is having their double shot in May versus June when they usually do. I could see it happening in Fukuoka or Hokkaido, because I don't think it's going to be happening at Korakuen or at Dead or Alive.
Hokkaido is interesting. I know at least in 2016, they ran a triple shot there, and two of the shows were headlined by King of Gate matches, and then the final night, they did a six-man tag. It was Monster Express versus Tribe Vanguard, Tozawa, Yoshino, and T-Hawk against Hulk, KZ, and Yamada. So that was a loaded six-man. Realistically, you could put a Triangle Gate match, or I'm sorry, a Twin Gate match in that spot. So yes, I've now talked myself out of that. I think we'll get it at some point in May. It'd be nice, just because I like those Hokkaido crowds, and I like that the vibe that those shows gave off in December. I would rather them stick the Twin Gate match at Fukuoka, but we will see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, because this is the title match I can see them skipping at Nagoya for Dead or Alive.
Very much so.
Any more thoughts on this before we start talking about the second annual Wakayama Rules winning tornado match?
Wakayama tornado winning match, three-way unit fight. Mike, you have the floor for this hodgepodge of a match.
All right, so this is the Wakayama tornado winning match, three-unit fight, Masquerade versus High End versus RED. Opening the show, they did their traditional, now, since they've done it twice in a row, case I'm calling it traditional, their traditional draw, where they eat umeboshis, which are pickled prunes, sometimes in a pastry, and whoever got the delicious one out of the first three would go in first, and then the two people who got bad ones then would do another one where the delicious one would enter second, and the person who sadly had eaten two bad umeboshis had to go in third. And then basically, it's kind of like a War Games match, 3-on-3-on-3, but the only like big thing, the entry order is like a War Games match. The team that had the first good umeboshi goes in first. You start off one versus one versus one. Every 60 seconds, someone else comes out filling out the rotation, just so I can clarify it there. The lottery order was RED first, Masquerade second, High End third. We started off with SB Kento, Jason Lee, and Dragon Kid. And then the entry order from there was Kai of RED, La Estrella of Masquerade, Keisuke Ikuda of High End. And then the final three were Eita of RED, Kota Minenora from Masquerade, and Yamato, the last entrant from High End. The two falls, as it was swept by RED. Kai scored both falls. The first fall was eliminating Masquerade, pinning Kota Minenora with the Meteor Impact in 15:36, and then the final fall was a low blow, then inside cradle on Yamato, eliminating High End in 18 minutes and 10 seconds. RED wins their second straight Wakayama Tornado winning match.
Much like the first one, a very good but not great match, and this one, I really feel like it took a while to get going. There was just not a lull, but up until the ninth man, Yamato, entered the ring, it was just there. It was a nice little match. And then once Yamato hit the ring, things kick into high gear. You had Masquerade doing a tremendous job of flying all around the ring. And then you get the heat on Kai, and you got Kai picking up both those pinfalls there, which on paper, I'm a little put off by, but seeing as how we're on the road to Dead or Alive, I did not mind it. I thought it was well done.
Yeah, as soon as it was very clear, and this is another thing that Jay did tremendous on commentary, made it very clear that, hey, he has a direct pinfall now over his tag team partner in the Parejas and Increíble Revelo Suicidas cage match. He has a pin over Yamato, so he has some momentum going there. And then pinning Kota Minenora when Jason Lee is the fall guy in Masquerade right now, I mean, they made sure that Kai got over strong. But yeah, it was something where like the first 7 minutes of this match were very kind of plodding, just sloppy but fine, just kind of brawling, since it was tornado rules until all teams were entered into the match. So it just kind of was there, and then the remaining, I guess, two-thirds of the match, then they went to the 3-versus-3-versus-3 style, and I felt like it picked up. But it's something where I feel like that this concept, it's a neat thing for the local fans, and the fact that this is Wakayama's match, and it will be that way to conclude. It was a very good match, but it did not break as high as I think it would have been if they just did a straight three-way six-man.
I like it. I hope they keep doing it. It's honestly a match that I would like to see more of it. This seems like the type of thing that if Drengi, you know, ran this out on multiple big shows throughout the year, they could really work out the kinks and make this match special, because I think there's something to this gimmick. I think there's a reason they return to it. There's a lot you can play with there, and I just don't know if they've quite figured out how to make the most of it yet, but it feels like it's a match that's worthy of their time. And this one was on its way to being very good. The finish was abrupt and it was effective because, you know, Yamato and Kai were going into what I thought was going to be a pretty exciting finishing stretch, and then Kai just hit him with the inside cradle and rolled him up. And I was like, oh, damn it, Kai, I wanted to see where this was going. Why do you have to win the match right now? So on one hand, very effective. And it was one of those matches where it the star rating system will hurt it because of how good Kai's heel work was here. But another match that served its purpose, that I think everyone came out looking good. You know, La Estrella was able to hit his big spots. The one guy, actually, that I thought was kind of lost in the shuffle was Keisuke Okuda. Did he leave an impression on you one way or another?
I mean, this was kind of a match where Okuda, with his style, like, is going to kind of fall back, right? Like, this kind of style, they really haven't worked the bantamweight multi-team matches to effectiveness yet. So I don't think it's necessarily on him. I just don't think this is a match that necessarily plays to his strengths, if that makes sense.
That's exactly it. He didn't have a Shida in there to kick and punch with, and because of that, you know, he didn't really go after SBK. He didn't really go after Kai. He didn't have any sequences with Eita. There's no one, I guess with the exception of Jason Lee, but they didn't go in that direction where he could really slug it out with on the Masquerade side. So you look at the nine guys here, and I feel like eight of them really contributed something, and Okuda was the one left in the dust. But that's not a knock on him, because I'm sure come May, when he's defending the Brave Gate again, or I guess, you know, April with the Punch Tabanaga deal that I would like to forget about, he'll be fine. It was just one of those things in this match he did not really jump out at me.
Yeah, it's something where, like, in these kind of matches, like, the best way that these matches are executed is when it becomes a very flowing kind of all-out sprint, and sprint's something that I think kind of gets overused at sometimes, but it's something that, like, it should be completely go. You have nine people in there, so you don't really need to have any rest spots or anything like that, and, you know, that's just not going to be something that plays to his strengths. And I think that with his match type, that unless he was the first person who came out and then spent the next 7 minutes just as soon as someone hits the ring, knocking them out, hanging the ring, knocking them out, it's just going to be a weird fix, a weird place for him. And he didn't really have someone that he could face off against, but I still thought this was very good. I still went 3.5 stars on it.
I'm a quarter star higher than you. I was at 3.75. And Mike, we talked about someone with Keisuke Okuda who didn't make a very good impression of that match. Well, the match before it, there was a youngster that certainly jumped off the page.
And Case, you always let me take my lap about Masquerade and Shin Skywalker. You called this one. You called Kakuta getting the win here. This was Benkei versus Hip Hop Kakuta in the singles match on the show. Hip Hop Kakuta won with a snap stuff pile driver in 15 minutes and 23 seconds.
This is true. I did call this as I was leaving the show in a panic last week, and I do apologize to our listeners. I had to deal with a very real work emergency. Everyone's fine. It's fine. I did have to leave the show, though, but I wanted to get in my take that Kakuta was going to beat Benkei in this match. I was correct. I did not think this would lead directly into a Dreamgate match. I really wish I had my crystal ball going so I would have predicted that. But as soon as I saw this match on paper, you know, Benkei's in a spot where he's in a protected unit. He's going to be pushed. He's going to have plenty of opportunities to get wins. Kakuta was, you know, in the balancing act. You know, he could have gone one way or another. I think a loss would have really hurt him, and a win would have really helped him. And Dragon Gate is in the business of elevating their young star, so I knew that he was going to get the win in this match. It's unfortunate that I didn't really love this match, and I sent you a message about it, and then we started talking about something else off the air before we started recording, so I don't know what you thought about this match, and I would really like your thoughts.
I thought that this was, seeing the main event angle and seeing that Kakuta now holds the Dream Key, I'm okay with it a little bit more than watching it in the moment, but I still think that this match, like, you did the comp in your review to the match he had against Strong Machine J that was very underwhelming after Benkei lost the title. This match was dry. The Wakayama crowd, which had, like, a moment where they did do some calls during the show. I forget which match it was, but there were calls on this show. Oh, it was during HAGE in the opener that the crowd did chant back HAGE and immediately went like, oh, we're not supposed to do that. But in this match, I mean, they were just kind of sitting on their hands. And then this match kind of like, it was a 15-minute match that felt every bit of it. The work there, they saved a bad finish. It was clear that the Hand of God discus lariat was not flush, and credit to both of them going like, all right, plan B, stuff pile driver. And even if that was plan A was the lariat and the stuff pile driver, it was a smart finish given how the Hand of God did not look that impressive. But it still was like 15 minutes like leading up to it, and just had like a very weird dynamic. Like, I know that like Benkei will be fine, but it was very much a, well, this is what Benkei is up to match, ... And I went 3 stars flat on it.
And I am not concerned about Hip Hop Kakuta as a singles wrestler.
No.
It is worth mentioning, this was, and I, Mike, I don't know if you realize this, this was his first televised singles match. The only other time he's wrestled a singles match was November 27th of last year on the Kanda and Benkei Homecoming Show, where he
wrestled in Chiba,
where he wrestled Shun Skywalker.
Yeah, and then Shun Skywalker at that time was beating everyone within 10 minutes with the SSW, so it was not one really to go with. But yeah, no, I mean, this was a big test for Kakuta, and I wouldn't say that he aced it, but I feel like he passed it.
Yeah, it was a passing grade. It's one of those, you know, we call it a B- or a C+. I'm not going to split the hairs there. There's certainly a reason to be cautious. I wouldn't say it's a cause for concern, but there's a reason to be cautious. There's plenty of room to improve, and I trust that literally every other body of work that we've seen Kakuta involved in, he's crushed it. I think he'll be able to figure this out here. I just, you know, Benkei, for as great as he is, and he is great, and I would say great, bolded, underlined, italicized, he has these matches every once in a while, the Strong Machine J match being one of them, but just throughout his career, every once in a while you get a Benkei match that just isn't really what you want it to be. And I thought this was clunky. It was just, it never found the gear that I was looking for. It didn't feel like a fight, like the bantamweight style that we talk about, but it also didn't feel fluid like a typical Dragon Gate match. It was a match that might have even looked better in other promotions, but match 3 on a Dragon Gate show, this is just not what I was hoping for from it. But now Kakuta not only has the lariat, he has the pile driver, and I'm still looking forward to the match with Skywalker. We've talked about that plenty on this episode. It is interesting, though, that, you know, his first singles match was not exactly a huge win.
And it's something where, and I know that we said Ben will be fine, but there's the evidence that Ben's not necessarily a tremendous wrestler against larger guys, which I think is now a fair thing to say, because, like, I can't think of, like, a performance that against someone that, and Dragon Gate is a smaller wrestler's company, like, to be fair, like, it's something that these two guys are easily one of the top 5 biggest guys in this company, between the two of them. I just can't think of very many matches where it's like he didn't get an opportunity to shoot Kondo before he tore his Achilles tendon. Him and Takashi Yoshida, my thoughts on Yoshida are already well documented at this point, but the onus I would put on this match is not on Kakuta. I think the onus in this match is on Benkei, and this is like a giant like head scratcher. And from now on, like, if Benkei's kind of a match against Kazuma Sakamoto, I'm going to have this creeping thought in my mind that being like, Benkei doesn't necessarily have great matches against guys who are taller than him, other than like Shun Skywalker.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point that I hadn't really thought of. But, you know, he works Skywalker like Skywalker's a junior. You know, he's able to throw him around, and the same can be said for who I think is Benkei's best opponent, Masaki Mochizuki. They're roughly the same height, certainly not the same size as Benkei. You know, looks like he's about 2 Mochizukis in terms of width and muscle. But when they wrestle, Benkei is able to throw Mochizuki around. Same thing with Naruki Doi. Same thing with Masato Yoshino. Same thing with KZ. Same thing with Pac. Those are the guys that Benkei has really delivered against. It's to your point, though, you know, this match, the Strong Machine J match, and a few matches that he's had with Yamato, where I always feel like they're really, really good, but they could have been better. It's something that he struggles with. He needs these clearly defined roles, and he needs guys that mirror him so Benkei right. can exude what he does best, which is throw guys around and look strong and look menacing. He can't do that against Kakuta. Strong Machine J is too big and quite honestly too fragile, and Yamato doesn't really bump like that, and that is where we've seen him hit these roadblocks in the past.
And it's something that this might seem like for our listeners that we are being kind of tough on him, but something that like we really are at this point now within this company. And as we've seen this generation shift here, I mean, Ben is one of the older people that will be leading the company here. And he's someone that, I mean, they prepared him for a certain way. They prepared him like that. If we want to talk about like hundreds across the board, the push into him finally in suiting pack was as good as you could see in pro wrestling. But it's something that's just going to be like a notable question mark, I feel like, going further with him. It's just going to be like, how's it going to be against someone that has not let Ben have like a Ben match? And I think Yamato, actually, you bring up Yamato is a very interesting point, because Yamato is his own person who has a very set style that there's a big disparity, I would say, between people's opinions of Yamato as a big singles match worker.
Absolutely. It's, you know, look, Big K is a former Dreamgate champion, okay? He's got to be able to deliver in spots like this. It's just something that he has to do.
Right, you're right. And then we get into match two. Match two is RED versus an unaffiliated tag team that were all basically just a bunch of dudes. Literally a bunch of dudes. As it was the RED team of BB Hulk, Kaito, Ishida, and Diamante versus the, I don't even know how to like call the relationship he has with Team Boku now. I guess associate of Team Boku, Ultimo Dragon, Bokudamo Dragon, and for one night only, Boku Kakatora. Diamante got the win because Bokudamo Dragon got DQ'd for stripping Diamante's mask in 11 minutes and 20 seconds.
This match pissed me off. I didn't like this at all.
It was something where, like, this was the match that, I don't know if you saw the preview, where I was like, they're going to try to accomplish two things in this match, and I don't know if it's going to work. And it did not necessarily work.
Well, yeah, the issue is that I felt like we got past the comedic part of this feud when Shimizu hit the shot put slam and Kobe Sambo Hall. And it's frustrating because the mask switch spot where Bukaltimo, you know, ends up taking Diamante's mask, and Diamante ends up taking Bukaltimo's mask. Funny spot in a vacuum. It was one of those deals where it was funny, but it wasn't effective. It wasn't really what I was looking for from this match at all. And then I thought the work was sloppy. I hated the direction that they went. I'm also curious because you watched the English feed. I did not. And I don't know if there was any sort of trepidation in Jay's voice towards the finish. Watching this match, it looked like they fucked up the finish. It looked to me like they were both supposed to unmask each other, but Diamante couldn't get the mask off of Shimizu's head. Maybe that's just how I read it. I would like your thoughts and if the English commentary team leaned one way or another.
The English commentary team is with us on this. We thought this was a double DQ. My notes I had it as a double DQ. I do not read the results until I watch a show, so I did not know that technically it was Diamante getting the fall here, because I thought it was double DQ too, and Jay and Hoho were kind of on the same page there, and everyone thought that I forgot who was on ring announcing. Was it Ono or was it Kikuchi? I'm trying to remember who was on ring announcing, but like Jay made points, is like, let's see what the ring announcer has to say, because like they just didn't. And then Jay was like, well, I guess Diamante actually wins this match here. But it just was like a mess, and like they tried to do the tightrope between we're building up to this Apuestas match, and then we're also, this is going to be our big comedy match on the show. And I wrote about in my review that this is going to be a hard thing for them to kind of, they're going to try to accomplish two things here, and the problem is when you try to accomplish two things and it's not done well, you don't accomplish anything at all.
That makes me feel much better, because I really hated this finish, just because one, it's not what I wanted, but two, I think they messed up the finish. I think Shimizu's mask was supposed to come off, and it didn't, and it left everybody awkward and confused. So, just a failure all around.
Awkward and Shimizu?
Those things tend to go hand in hand.
Yeah. I went too flat, you know? Just was not good.
It was below average professional wrestling.
It was, and for a company like Dragon Gate, where everything else on the show, I was 3 stars or higher. And I think you were as well, the fact that this was like the bad match here. And that kind of shows like the form, because I remember there was a time case where I would be DMing you about Kobe Sambo Hall shows that you wisely skipped, where it was like I was throwing twos at it, like I was a Clemson away fan traveling to, I don't know, Miami. I was throwing twos at it like this, and this was like, I can't remember last time they've had a match that I've disliked this much on pay-per-view.
Yeah, you threw me for a loop with your college football reference there. I vaguely understand what you're talking about.
I guess I'll explain the joke. Clemson fans traditionally hand out special $2 bills. They have like their dumb Clemson stamp on it because it's some weird tradition they have that whenever they're traveling, they pay with $2 bills. Real hayseed stuff, to be honest.
You know, where I grew up in Indiana, which is a town in central Indiana, there was an SEC recruiter that moved to that town because SEC schools... For the story that I was told was SEC schools needed smarter kids, and they pinpointed the area that I grew up in as an area that was affluent enough to be able to afford those schools with kids that were much smarter than the average SEC school. So I ended up with like a whole fleet of kids in my high school that went to Alabama and that went to Clemson and that went to South Carolina. And 98% of them transferred back to Indiana after their freshman year. The South is a strange place. The South is not for everybody. And unfortunately, the Clemson $2 bill tradition did not rub off on the people that went there from Indiana.
Well, for the record, Clemson's ACC.
Oh my God, how embarrassing of me. Well, my God, we might have had an ACC recruiter there too, because I know a lot of kids that went to Clemson. And, you know, with all due respect to the ACC, you know, there's some Carolinas in there that probably need some academic help.
I mean, Clemson is an agricultural school, to be fair. Like, South Carolina was the school that all the rich kids went to, whereas the people who were coming from their farms went to Clemson.
What is the... I guess, is there like a stereotype of the U? Like, what is the type of student that ends up at Miami?
First and foremost, there is, and it's not people from Florida.
Oh, fair enough.
I mean, it's a private school versus Florida and Florida State. So there is a significant thing, but like you get people who either live and are Miami natives and just are never going to leave the city of Miami. You'll get some people from like Palm Beach, Broward County, which is Fort Lauderdale coming down, but vast majority of the people in it, it was a different experience for me because I was in grad school, but talking to my brother and my brother being an undergrad while I was at grad school, I kind of got exposed to it. Mostly Northeast expats who want to go to a school that is very pretty, that is a decent academic school, and they want to party a whole lot.
My only connection to the University of Miami is that, and I don't know if you played this game or not, but NCAA MVP Baseball 2007... Which,
oh, you got to play at the light.
It might be the best video game ever. It's up there. I mean, I played that game for hours upon hours upon hours, and I ran a franchise with the Miami Hurricanes, and I still remember some of the NCAA-generated player names from the save that I had because I would play that game so much, and I loved my little squad, and I missed that game. College baseball. I love college baseball. It's the one college sport that I follow somewhat actively.
Hey, it's something that University of Miami, one of the most prestigious schools in college baseball, which you probably heard a lot of clips about Miami being one of the most winning teams in College World Series history.
This is true. It's I would eventually like to get down to Omaha for a weekend. It's the one thing, you know, this is a very real moment on the Open the Voice Gate podcast. My dad has done a lot of cool things in his life. He has not been to the College World Series, and that is something I would like to take him to one day.
Oh, no, absolutely. My dad and I and my brother, we've talked about this. Like, the two places that my dad has, like, talked about as he's fully vaccinated. It's like, well, I've never been to Cooperstown, and I've always wanted to go to Omaha for the College World Series.
Have you been to Cooperstown?
No, I've not. Here is the country mouse coming out. Other than New York City for WrestleMania weekend and visiting a friend who went to... forget what school it was up there in what college is in Saratoga Springs? It's a hippie school.
You are asking the wrong guy, and I'm in college, but I don't know. I will say this though.
I've not been to Cooperstown. I've not gone really north of New York City other than Skidmore. Skidmore is in Saratoga Springs.
The issue with Cooperstown is that you have to get to Cooperstown because it's just out in the fucking middle of nowhere. But when I was 12, either 12 or 13, I played a baseball tournament in Cooperstown. There's youth fields all over the place there, and it's like it's a big deal to play there. Now, it just so happened that the team I was on that year was abysmal, and we got blown out in literally every game. But going to Cooperstown, the whole town is very cool, and then going to the Hall of Fame, it is awesome. And it's one of those things that I would even recommend to the most casual baseball fan. I think for as, batshit crazy as the electoral process is, the museum itself is beautiful, and it is so well done. So I would highly recommend that if you ever get the chance, with, again, the caveat being you have to go to Cooperstown, which is quite the hike.
Yeah, I was going to say, Cooperstown, it's not, like, close to Albany, is it? Like you're about to fly in.
It's close to nothing. I mean, it's just a nightmare to get to.
Yeah, no matter where you're going, you're going to be driving a bit to get there, and that's always been, like, one of those things, like, it seems like within COVID and everything like that, since they've not been able to have Hall of Fame induction ceremonies and all like the trips like this, like I wonder how cities or towns really, I mean, Cooperstown's not a big town, I think, but I wonder how these places have done with COVID, just because how much their industry is so reliant on tourism.
Cooperstown is specifically somewhere that I've thought about a lot over the past year, because that entire town is just, it's, everything is baseball themed. It's geared towards people coming in the spring and summer and fall and either playing baseball tournaments there or spending, a weekend at the Hall of Fame. And I would hate to think that some of those stores or restaurants have gone away, because it really left an impression on me of like, God, everything is local here. Everything is small. And it's just, it's tremendous. So like I said, I would recommend that. It's very fun. Nearly teared up at Pedro Martinez's Hall of Fame speech when he went into the Hall of Fame. One of my favorite athletes of all time.
I will have a moment when Adrian Beltre gets inducted on his first ballot and he has the Texas Rangers cap and everyone tries to run and rub his head, especially Elvis Andrews, wherever Elvis Andrews is at that point.
I'm finally at the age where guys are going to be put in the Hall of Fame that I not only watched play, but I watched them play in their prime years. And I guess Beltre would be an example of that. Clayton Kershaw, obviously, one. Miguel Cabrera is the big one for me. My dad's a Tigers fan. I grew up watching, at one point, 120, 130 Tigers games a year. Knowing that he'd never won a World Series with the Tigers and that Verlander never won a World Series with the Tigers, but then bounced to Houston and won one. Oh my God, it just eats me alive, because those teams should have been so much better. But when Cabrera goes into the Hall, yeah, that'll probably be an emotional day for me.
I mean, there's a reason why my puppy is named Pudge. It's after Pudge Rodriguez when he went to the Hall.
And I do love that. There are two dogs on this earth that I care about. One, and this is a deep cut reference that only a few people will get, Cheryl Scott's Weather Beagle. I'm a huge fan. The other dog that I care about is Pudge.
If Nate is listening to this show, he will pop.
That's the thing.
Nate,
I gotta
listens.
Get on everything Alita talks of Cheryl Scott.
Well, the little legend right now has passed out. So if you ever hear any like scratching or noises in the background, it is Pudge. He has a special little playpen that he stays in as I record, but he's doing all right. But that conversation about Cooperstown, which has a population of 1,700, a lot more interesting than match two. The opener case, we had a 8-man tag team match, full complement of Natural Vibes, KZ, Susumu Yokosuka, Genki Horiguchi, and UT versus the unaffiliated team of just what do these guys talk about? Sacha Yoko Boy, Punch Tominaga, Ho Ho Loon, and representing Rikyu Dragon Pro Wrestling, the Dawn of Okinawa, Gurken Mask. KZ got the win on Sacha Yoko Boy for running elbow smash in 10 minutes and 48 seconds.
The thing is, Gurken Mask is actually very good, and I mean, at this point, he's up there in age. I don't know how much he can still go, but I genuinely enjoy whenever he pops up on tape.
Yeah, I mean, he turns 50 this year, so...
Does his home promotion, does that ever air anywhere?
Well, Jay helpfully told us on commentary, the Rikyu Dragon shows that have happened since the show were on Twitcasting. Because they had all the Dragon Gate people in there.
I would rather them film it on VHS tapes. I mean, that's easier to understand the twit casting. I was asking because there was he just wrestled Hubbo in a 22-minute singles match, and I would like to track that down. But if it's on twit casting, that is not going to happen.
Yeah, just so people know who he is a little bit more than we got into last time, he is a Osaka Pro guy. Like, during, like, the last parts of its peak, and he left with Super Delphin to form Okinawa Pro Wrestling. I guess Super Delphin is out on that, and it's now Gurken Mask who does it.
Yeah,
Delphin
does Seafood Pro Wrestling now.
Does that still exist?
I think more so than Osaka Pro does. I think it exists in some capacity, but certainly not filmed anywhere. And I mean, it has to be like the most local of local shows if it does.
This might be the one promotion that runs more, but no one knows anything about than Secret Base.
You know, Super Delphin, glad he came up. We'll be talking about him on next week's show, and Mike doesn't know why, but Super Delphin will come up next week. I can promise you that. As for this opener, you know, look, it's a natural vibes match. It was super fun. I thought everybody played their role well. I liked what Sachihoko Boy did. I specifically liked Gurken Mask chemistry with Susumu. I thought those two looked really good together, which is, that's the thing. It's like, my introduction to Gurken Mask was that 2016 Super J Cup, and he wrestled Kano in the first round of that tournament, and it was awesome. Like, people left that tournament going, who was this Gurken Mask guy? He killed it with Kano, but Kano won in that tournament. What I would do for an oral history of the 2016 Super J Cup.
I just wanted to talk to Takashi Okamura and ask him one question. How full was the briefcase?
that I remember, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school here. I was once talking to a professional wrestler, and that could be a few, because there are a few different English speakers on the Super J Cup shows. I was once talking to a professional wrestler, and I asked him about that. He's like, those shows, something was off. Something didn't quite go right, did it? And I was like, I covered both those shows on voicewrestling.com. My reviews are still up there. And it was like the second night of that show, it's hard to explain if you've never seen it just how bad Taichi versus Liger was, and because of that, the uphill battle that the rest of this show had to deal with. Because there's like a super fun Matt Sydal versus Will Ospreay match on those shows. There's a Young Bucks versus Motor City Machine Guns match that is great, but once Taichi versus Liger happened, everyone's interest was dead.
Yeah, and of course I checked out immediately after Liger beat Ada. So.
That is true. A match I rewatched recently, and it is still so much fun.
I mean, Eita, hell of a babyface. Can't wait for it to happen again.
Oh my god, I would love it. Wouldn't that be just the best thing ever if after Dead or Alive we get a babyface Eita running King of Gate? I would fully support that.
Yeah, that'd be real interesting. But yeah, no, this opener was solid. It was a fun opener. I mean, Natural Vibes gave this match the exact amount of respect as they should. It was pretty jokey. This was when the crowd accidentally did an HAGE call. And everyone else in this match, I mean, the nice thing about like these openers, the way they do this, like the people on the roster who aren't as skilled, I think that's a nice way of putting it. You only see them for like 2 minutes, and that's fine. And, you know, Natural Vibes, I am really stoked for the April Kobe Samba Hall show when Takedo Kamei comes back, and we get to see, I think he's probably going to be wearing a pair of overalls, Kay, so I hope you're prepared for that.
Well, look, I'm hashtag team overalls, unless Alexa Bliss is wearing them, because that is creepy. But other than that, you know, I love the overalls. I am afraid that they are positioning Takedo Kamei as the next Taiji Ishimori, which in the scope of the Dragon system is obviously the worst thing you could do to a person. So I fear for him there, but Kamei's coming back in April. Doi's coming back in April. There's a lot to look forward to. And there was a lot to enjoy on Memorial Gate 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, as we mentioned up front, the English version is up. It does not have a date of which it will be pulled down on. So you'll have that to go back and visit at your whim. Jay and Ho-Ho are such so much fun, and it's something where I, if I'm not watching live or immediately after, and I'm not going to be waiting for the, and if they're not live, I go to the English feed. Like, and it's usually something that I was pretty resistant to doing, but I have a great time with that. And if you just want to have a, there was no commentary on it for the Japanese side, right?
Oh boy. I don't believe so.
Yeah. So if you're someone who needs to have commentary, it'll be up there in English until whenever. And if not, then it will be up as the Japanese version until the third, which I did look this up when we were talking about Super Delphin. He was a Osaka Pro Tag Team Champion in 2019. Do you want to guess who his partner was?
Was it Gamma?
It was Gamma. Let me read you this match. This was at the Edeon Arena, Osaka number 2. This was the Osaka Pro 20th Anniversary Celebration. With the subtitle of Welcome New Era, Osaka Pro Tag Team Title Match, Gamma and Super Delphin defeated Magito Kishiwada and Takashi Yoshida for the titles in 15 minutes and 32 seconds. The main event was Tsubasa versus Billy King Kid. We had the bodyguard with Monday Ryu and Zeus versus Hide Kobata, Kushikatsu Oyagi and Tomura, and then Natural Vibes of KZ and Susumu Yokosuka versus Takeo Kida and Ultimate Spider Jr. And Super Shisa was an opener. I have to see if this may tape anymore. This is very, very weird and something I'm very much into.
Yeah, if it happened in Osaka number 2, I would think there's a shot, but I don't know if I've seen Osaka Pro footage after 2010, maybe 2011. I mean, it's just like one day it just ceased to exist. I cannot get over the unhinged energy of Bodyguard Zeus and Mandai Ryu on the same team. That is horrifying to think about.
Third from the top.
That's insane. That is like 13 minutes. Disgusting trio.
And here's something to really state about this show. There was all the matches, with the exception of the main event, were under 15 minutes. Tsubasa versus Billy King Kid, 28 minutes and 6 seconds.
Match probably is awesome. Billy King Kid is a total pro.
Yeah. But that is what we had for Memorial Gates. As I said, I really enjoyed the show for like 2.5 hours. Like, our ratings weren't too far off. It just was something that, like, I came into it, the show, thinking like, all right, it's really going to need the main event to pull off. And the main event pulls off. We have certain things here that could be fun. Nothing else I was especially thinking I was excellent. Maybe I was a little underwhelmed by Benkei versus Hip Hop Kakuta. I had a little bit of higher expectations that I didn't fulfill. Everything else was kind of what I expected, and you know, it was a good time. And you know, that's what I care about, is having a good time watching pro wrestling.
This episode made me like this show more than I realized, so it's a positive 2 thumbs up from me. Like I said in my review, Memorial Gate is one of the most digestible big shows you will see all year, so I highly recommend it.
Yep, and as we move into April, we're closing out March. The next time that they will be back on the network, they actually have finished their March schedule. They have no shows on the 31st or the 30th or the 31st. The next show on the network will be next Friday from Tokyo Cork and Hall, 6:30 Friday start. They have ended the state of emergency there, so they don't have to have a show where they're out at 8 o'clock. We only have 2 matches announced for the showcase, and they are 2 matches that, I mean, they've been building one of them a whole lot, and the other one you feel like they'll be making a much bigger deal of. But boy, Tokyo Cork and Hall, we have Mascara contra Mascara, Diamante versus Bukodomo Dragon, and then the Naruki Doi comeback special 6-man tag team match. Naruki Doi, Yamato, Dragon Kid versus the RED team of SB Kento, Hip Hop Kakuta, and Kai.
I think the main event is going to be outstanding. I am really, really excited for a Doi Yamato Dragon Kid trio, and specifically going against those guys. Now, I mean, it was interesting when you had SBK and Kai in there against Yamato and Dragon Kid. Now you throw in the wrinkle that Kakuta is also in this match. I think it means Doi is taking the fall. I think Doi is eating an ass to the face from Hip Hop Kakuta, and Kakuta's going to pin Doi in his return match.
I think that it either has to be that, or it has to be a no contest. And they do a no contest, then what are they going to do immediately right after? They're going to restart the match, and then suddenly Speed Star hits, and Masato Yoshino comes out, and then Ada comes out because his quest to retire him, and we have an impromptu 8-man tag, special double comeback match. Like, it's either got to be Doi eating the butt and then getting a lariat. And God, me being me, I just said that without thinking of any pretense whatsoever.
That's we gotta start getting drops on this show. If our listeners want to send us drops, Mike Spears eating the butt needs to go in that folder immediately. Look, either scenario, I'm a fan of. If either of those happen, I'm gonna be really into that main event.
Yeah, I'm really stoked for that. That's all we know for that show, and I mean that's next Friday. So if our recording schedule, we might have a full card to preview next week. But I think we'll probably be dipping back into the buffet next week. I know, Case, you were alluding to something, but I also know that there's some Dragon Gate future stuff for us to watch on the buffet.
That is true. Yeah. So yeah, there'll be a new episode next week with plenty of stuff to talk about, either a Corkin preview or some Super Delphin stuff that I'm gonna send Mike.
Yep, and I can't wait for it. Anything else you want to hit on before we got out of here?
Yes, one note. It'll be up on voicesofwrestling.com by the time you are listening to this, a 15-year retrospective of the Blood Generation versus Doofixer match from Ring of Honor's first Supercard of Honor. I wrote an article, again, 15 years to the day since that match. I think it is the most influential match in modern wrestling history, and I get into that, as well as just how hard it was for the Dragon system to break into the United States. A lot of talk about MLW and even some TNA talk about trying to bring in Toriumon and Dragon Gate guys. Those never worked out. And of course, they end up, you know, Shima and Shingo and Ring of Honor at the end of 2005. And then the triple shot weekend with the Dragon Gate guys that, again, I think they changed the scope of professional wrestling with Blood Generation versus Doofixer at Supercard of Honor. So that will be up at voiceofwrestling.com by the time you're hearing this. Give it a read, and I appreciate it when you do.
Yeah, and, you know, since tomorrow is going to be the 15-year anniversary, find some time to watch the match. It's on YouTube.
It's free on Ring of Honor's YouTube. It's a tremendous gift.
Yeah, it's one of the most special matches of the last 25 years. I think it's fair to say with that. But yeah, I'll be looking forward to that article as well. If you want to go back, my Kazuma Sakamoto versus Benkei match, if you've not watched the show yet, I break down kind of both of their careers and both their leading to the moment and talking a whole about that as well. But I think that's going to do it for this week, Case. So you can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. You can follow Case _InnerCase, and I am at Fujihaya. But for Case, I'm Mike. Thanks for listening to Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back next week with another episode. Take care.